Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to revisit a conversation that we had some time ago with Lorraine Clegg Parker. Lorraine is the Chief People Officer at Allison Transmission, and she shares lessons learned in her career and perspective on hiring great talent. She has international experience working both in Americas, Europe, and Asia, and looking forward to today's conversation with Lorraine. Lorraine, first off, can you give us just a little bit of your background and your story?
Yes, certainly. Well, good afternoon. Nice to see you again. In the early days following my degree, I started life as a mobile sports coach, peripatetic sports coach. And then from there, quite a departure, I went into sales, which gave me a great foundation in customer relationship, driving for results, admin excellence. And also I learned how to park my car in tight parking spaces in places like Liverpool in the UK. So that was useful skill to learn. I had assignments in sales and trade marketing in those early days. And then I made a transition to HR. I went back to university and studied my CIPD qualifications. And then I've enjoyed a wonderfully beautiful international HR career since that time. And I've been really, really fortunate to work for a couple of prestigious Fortune 500 organizations and some smaller entrepreneurial public companies, and equally in a private equity-backed environment across a variety of industries.
Okay. Well, give us just a little bit of some of the key influences in your life just to get you to where you are today as a leader. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. As I reflect back on what influenced me as a leader, I do see that as an evolutionary process. And I'll start firstly with family. I grew up as the youngest of four girls in a blue-collar family and with the right role models to teach me the value of hard work. So that's an ethic that kind of underpins who I am.
Sure.
One of my sisters, who has sadly passed away, was born with an extra chromosome. She was Down syndrome. And this has had two effects on me. I think, first of all, it does soften your heart to accept a wider range of people in your life. And it also toughened me up a little bit when some of the kids would, say nasty things to her. So it had a double effect. And invariably, that's given me a unique perspective on life and has influenced my leadership style, which I like to consider is very inclusive in how I get things done. So I think those are the early things. There are many things along the way beyond that, sure. But those are the early ones.
So what was your biggest, as far as you moved from the UK to the US, what was the biggest thing that you had to adjust to?
Oh, yeah. Look, we're two countries that speak the same language, but quite right. Frankly, on a day-by-day basis, we don't. I quickly had to learn what a faucet was instead of a tap, so some of the obvious vocabulary things. I was also transitioning from France, where I'd had on a daily working basis in my working life, had to translate everything in my head to French as well. I have relatively good conversational French. It's weakened with the passage of time, but so that was the first thing, was kind of getting on the same page. And then secondly, I just think culturally, the US is incredibly driven in its change management style. Mm-hmm. Europe tends to be a little bit steadier, by my findings, in the way that it gets things done. When things do get done, they stick really well. Whereas perhaps here in the US, I see that things change more quickly. And so I had to translate, across from a European style and an upbringing to that little bit more faster, go-get-it American style.
Got it. So I asked this question of most every guest that we have on. If you were knowing what you know now, if you were able to go back and talk to a 20-year-old Lorraine, what would you tell her?
Yeah, that's a fun question. First of all, I would have had to catch myself because I was typically running around a field hockey pitch at that time. But I think, look, I've been really fortunate to have actually lived in several different functions. But I think if I look back, It would have been good to have experienced even more functions. I do think as a chief people officer, chief human resources officer, understanding the variety of jobs and the people that you serve is really, really useful. So the carrying of the bag was good, but at perhaps more functions, you know, a stint in finance. Can't believe I'm saying that, but that would have been fun too. I think gathering more international experiences earlier, I would have loved to have done. The opportunity eventually came, but it would have been good to push that out earlier, because I think that living and working cross-culturally develops an incredible amount of EQ and allows you to deal better with ambiguity. And it accelerates both of those things, I think, as you transcend borders.
So is there any advice that you received that, looking back on, you should have ignored or you did ignore?
that's fun. When people give you advice, it rarely lacks pertinence. You know, there's something pertinent in there, and it's whether you choose to listen to it or not. I would typically kind of reflect on advice, especially if my first reception of it is that maybe I'm not aligned with the thinking, but I do tend to reflect and I'll loop back around and integrate it. But I remember one piece of advice. A very elderly aunt of mine once kind of suggested that females in the workplace and in leadership roles was probably not going to be the best place to spend my time. So I'm really glad I ignored that.
Sure, absolutely. So a lot of our listeners are earlier in their career. They're maybe first time in an executive role, and they're putting together their first team, or they're inheriting a team. What advice would you give someone as they're moving into putting together that team or managing their first team?
And I think you've just hit the nail on the head with the comment around you maybe putting a new team together or you've inherited one. And I think the process that you go through in terms of assimilating a team together, a new leader assimilation as the leader comes in, or indeed getting that team to work better together, is really important. And I would really recommend that any leader gets help from a trained professional to do that. Success is ultimately driven by having a common purpose, and that common purpose typically surrounds itself, shall we say, in mission and values and culture and clear outcomes and common working practices, you know, the way that people get things done, the way they make decisions together. So I would suggest that a leader would want to establish that very early with the team. Always better if it can be done collectively. And with the passage of time, people turn. And I think it's good to refresh those moments of integrating teams together. I personally love to facilitate a new team integration and building new leaders into organizations. And I find it's valuable. It's a valuable way of accelerating what's on people's minds, so you can get things out there and be responsive and get to action much more quickly by doing a process like that. Cultures need space for disagreement. I think it's important that leadership teams talk about how they're going to make decisions. And there are many models out there that people can apply. And again, it depends on the culture that you're working in on how those decisions get made. So that, those would be the things, I think, that would be important. And I think a pertinent topic right now is the whole aspect of inclusion and diversity. A diverse, inclusive team is going to fulfill better outcomes for an organization. You may not always agree. That's important, because innovation is going to be driven off of disagreements. I'm in the process of doing some construction work, and out of a difficult decision or difficult process, actually I'm finding that some innovative secondary solutions come out that we'd not thought of in the first place. So whilst it might be building a little anxiety at times, that kind of disruption is useful to creating better thought processes.
So you've watched a lot of leaders hire, and you've been a part of that process of helping them and guide them. What are some of the common mistakes that you see leaders make as they're going through the hiring process?
Yeah. Be prepared, because I'm going to ask this question back to you, given what you do for a living every day. Sure. Look, the mistakes that I perhaps see people making in hiring are, again, maybe not having a common understanding of what the job is first and foremost, so that when you go out to hire, if stakeholders are not aligned on the outcomes, it can be incredibly difficult for an individual coming in to get the traction necessary in the early months. And if you end up with an early departure, that is disturbing. both for the individual and the organization, expensive and very disruptive to a business, especially in a big leadership role. So I think the first thing is getting that common alignment around what the role is. The second thing that I would say is that leaders need to make sure that as they select, they are very clear on what's necessary for the now and future, not just the now. You've kind of got to hire ahead and always be thinking of succession. That would be the advice I would give every time, that, you know, where's this person going to go next? Because they're going to want to know where they're going to go next. And so those are sort of the key things that come to mind. And I would say, whilst it's really, really important that a workforce together is collegiate, the first most important thing is, has the person got the resident skills and experiences to do that job? And trying to make sure that the like factor is secondary in that process rather than the primary selection decision. So getting those core fundamentals, and then if everyone can work well together as well, that is absolutely the icing on the cake. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with what you said. I think one of the things I see younger or not necessarily younger, but people that are in new leadership roles do is they tend to hire people like themselves. They tend to like somebody that reminds them of themselves as far as their leadership. So I think to be aware of that, that there's a tendency from all of us, I think, to tend to hire that way and to make sure that you're hiring the person for the right reasons, like you said. I think it's, you know, identifying the role and kind of what's necessary for success for the role and making sure that that's kind of the criteria versus, again, the likability factor. That's part of culture and kind of getting along with the team, but yeah, definitely needs to be some other criteria involved. You've seen kind of how that things have, you've been involved in a lot of questions, and sometimes questions can be asked during interviews that don't always pertain. And maybe, you know, you've heard a question asked and you just use it just because of that. But what are some of the favorite interview questions that you feel would be good for people to put in their tool bag?
Yeah. Look, first of all, I'm a great believer in competency-based questions, looking at the real examples people can bring to bear, because typically that's going to help you understand whether they can really do the job. I'm not a wild interview question answer. You're not going to get anything completely obtuse from me. It's not my MO. The kind of things that I like to ask people are the following. If they've had a really great example that they've shared with me of successes, I like to understand with due reflection and retrospect, what might they have done differently were they to do that again? And it's interesting because you can get answers from, well, no, absolutely nothing, it was perfect, to, well, you know, over the years I've contemplated this and that. And I think that's useful to see if someone can be a little introspective in that answer. So that's one thing I like. I also like to find out what drives people outside of work. And, you know, there are some questions you obviously have to avoid in our profession for any interviewer. But, you know, asking that question around, you know, what are the things motivate them, you start to get a feel of that whole person rather than just the work persona. And I think that's very important, especially when you think about the culture of an organization and the social sort of responsibility that figures very highly, especially in our Gen Yers and Gen Zers these days.
So there's been a lot of changes in HR and practices, and the HR role has definitely changed over the years. Definitely has moved from being kind of that critical leadership advisor to the CEO and to others within the organization. Tell a little bit about how you've seen that whole thing develop in the CHRO role and the importance of that, as well as kind of how it's evolved.
Yeah. I think over the last several years, there's been some really interesting work done by people like Gartner, one of my former leaders being instrumental in that, as they've looked at the CHRO model and where we operate and what's important to an organization. I think what's definitely changed is the advent of AI, artificial intelligence, in how decisions are made and talent is screened, and some of those predictive elements around success in an organization or retention, etc. So that's become quite prevalent. I'm seeing a lot of work out there now on what I'll call the employee experience. It's that holistic management of the employee life cycle. For anyone that's worked in CPG or any customer-driven organization. You know, we've known that from a customer lifecycle perspective for many, many years, but suddenly that's becoming front and center in organizations now, because we take people on a journey and we have to be sure that we help them throughout the life cycle and evolution of their personal situation and their life and career. And I think that has become right out there in front of people now and is incredibly important. I also think, you know, over time that personnel administration piece has been pushed somewhat to the side. We've still got to be administratively really excellent. There's no question that there are things that we do that require that. We have to work compliantly. If it's a public company, obviously SEC requirements. But I'm pleased to say that the talent management piece and the succession seems to be coming more strongly to the forefront of organizations, because that's the lifeblood of an organization as it innovates and develops itself.
Sure. So you've had people that you've worked with that have mentored you in your career and kind of helped you along. Talk a little bit about some of the mentors that you've had and the importance of that for somebody that is coming up as a leader.
Yeah, that's a tough question, because I would feel like it would need to be the Oscars and my needing to mention many people's names. And, you know, I may not do that. I may not mention some names, but maybe I'll use the first name just to kind of, they'll know when they listen in to us. First of all, parents and the mentorship that I got there. I was encouraged to work hard as a kid. So that, you know, leaves you with a legacy, which has been very important to me. Older sisters that have been really strong sports ladies, and you know, that's rubbed off on me. So those early influences are there. But then in my career, Peter, one of my first roles, my early days in the Bristol Myers Squibb world, Peter constantly stretched me as an individual, made me realize I could do things that I maybe didn't think were possible. And then sort of as I moved through my career, I'll say Mike was just the most diplomatic, put together leader that I could have ever worked for. And his guidance and coaching every day was so important to me and my development. And then I'll say Bob, who remains very dear to me as someone that really helped me think about the way that I get my work done in an organization that was kind of coming together in some very different circumstances and really needed that higher bar. And Bob provided a lot of both mentorship and coaching to me in order to develop myself further. So just a few names there. They'll know who they are.
So any habit or behavior that you've developed over the last, you know, 5 years that has been helpful to you as far as you've grown, continue to grow as a leader?
Because I think I came from that sales world, really driven and sort of results, hard runner. And I think I've learned to accept over the last several years a little bit about more about a holistic me as an individual and the need for that balance. Outside of work, I love to get my sport in and kind of decompress in that way. I'm not typically a person that's going to sit and retreat and be quiet. I'm rather extroverted in style. So for me, it'll be music, it'll be running, it'll be my pickleball, and just ways of managing my whole self so that I can be the best I can be in work. And I think that's important. I think probably in my earlier days, it was work, work, work. And I still work hard, but I think I've learned to balance that a bit better.
Sure. Yeah. So what parting advice would you give someone is there in their career? And again, we have people that are at every stage within their career, but a lot of the listeners are kind of starting out, but any advice that you would give?
Yeah. Some terminology that folks use as you're going through various stages of your life: have your kind of personal board of directors. It's a very close, trusted network of people that you can rely on for sound mentorship and advice and bouncing ideas around with and just giving you a different perspective. And I've benefited from that in various facets of my life. I've got a lot of people that I can go to, still go to from many years ago, to ask their opinion on where I might be headed next or things that I'm looking at that I maybe don't have all the answers for. So use that network and ask for advice, because it's a lonely world out there and you've got to use those people to really, really help you thrive and become a better you.
Great. Well, thanks, Lorraine. This has been a lot of fun getting to hear your story and your advice. And I know that our listeners are going to appreciate what you've offered today. And definitely wish you success in your career and your next venture.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.